This is Minds Worth Meeting from Stern Strategy Group, a podcast where we talk with some of the top thought leaders in the world, from business leaders and technology analysts.
For the first time really in history, technologies of many, many different types are getting exponentially cheaper, that is double-digit percentages cheaper, every single year.
To academics and researchers.
Language is really one of the most sophisticated tools that we have to accomplishing self-expression, the sentences we speak and the ones we choose not to.
We welcome a new Mind Worth Meeting in each episode. Here you'll find accessible, down-to-earth conversations about some of the most important topics of the day with the experts and leaders who are the top authorities in their fields. And now, here's Mind's Worth Meeting.
Welcome back to another episode of Minds Worth Meeting. I'm your host, Whitney Jennings, and I'm here today with a very special guest. She is an innovator, entrepreneur, and inventor of robotic technologies and artificial intelligence, a former senior NASA robotics researcher and Mars exploration research engineer at the space agency's storied Jet Propulsion Laboratory. The accolades go on and on. Named by MIT Technology Review as a top young innovator and one of the 23 most powerful women engineers by Business Insider. She's co-founder and board director of Zyrobotics. She's a best-selling author of the 2020 audiobook Sex, Race, and Robots, How to Be Human in the Age of AI, which I highly recommend you listen to from start to finish. She's the first woman dean of the College of Engineering at The Ohio State University. I'm so excited to introduce you to pioneering roboticist and the foremost authority on human emotion-centered robotic design, Dr. Ayanna Howard. Welcome to Minds Worth Meeting, Dr. Howard.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. We can just dive in because this whole episode is, we're talking about AI. So you said AI is poised to enhance every aspect of our lives, personal and professional, from work, healthcare, education, manufacturing. How do you see AI defining the future of everything?
Well, so one of the things that most people don't realize is that everything you touch right now that deals with computing traditionally is designed based on data and algorithms. And we call that artificial intelligence. How do you use human data? How do you use our interactions with the world to do things interesting? Everything from, you know, driving our car in terms of cruise control, going to the airport and having facial recognition identify you so you can easily go through TSA, figuring out what's the best flight that you want to get to from Atlanta to London at 2 p.m. on Friday, August 5th. And so AI is part of our everyday lives because it just is what functions. Everything.
Is that a good thing or should we be cautious about that? Should we be mindful about that? How should we be thinking about the fact that AI is already part of our daily lives, but now we're hearing all this new news about, say, generative AI? So it seems new, but the whole time we've been using AI every day.
Yeah, so I think what's going on right now really is the fear mongering. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, this is not the first time. Back in the day when we had the first AI winner, where there was billions put into AI investment, there was this whole fear, oh, AI is going to take over the world. And that was early, you know, 1970s, 1980s. And we've had a couple of these AI hypes and then AI winners where people realize, oh, it's not as scary as we thought. We're just in another era where the tools and techniques are much more advanced because of computing. But we've been part of this world in terms of interacting with AI for a while. We do have to be mindful, though, because I think now is a time to ensure that everyone's part of the equation. I think the difference between now and in the past is that AI has seeped into things that we consider our civil liberties, things that we consider interacting with our quality of life, whether it's jobs or healthcare. And that's the things we need to be careful about, because we need to have a voice of when AI can be used and when we should have rules, regulations, policies, so that we also have the ability to speak up of when it's used for good and when it's not used for good.
So speaking of the ethics of AI, I know as an educator and professional speaker, you frequently talk about the ethical development, who's in the room when the technology is being developed. With all the conversations about regulation, who do you see ultimately as going to be the regulator? Do you think it's going to be the companies that are going to self-regulate, or the government's just going to lay down the law, or will it be a combination of the two?
For it to work, it's going to have to be a combination of the two, plus civil liberties groups and advocacy groups. Because as we know, the larger the company, the more funding they have to warp laws in the direction that they want. I mean, that's a fact. And we can see this in pharma. We can see this in military weaponization of things. And so the regulations are basically, I would say, the low-hanging fruit. We should be able to know when AI is being used for making decisions that impact our quality of life. I mean, there's some basic common sense. And so really, rules and regulations set the playing field. Ethics is different. So ethics is this gray area. Rules and regulations are usually the lowest hanging fruit. They're the things that you look back and like, oh, why didn't we have this before? Whereas ethics are, well, how do you actually use it? How do you make decisions where there are no right or wrong answers? Mm-hmm. In healthcare, as an example, healthcare doctors make these ethical decisions all the time of who they treat. Do they treat the person who can definitely endow the hospital forever and ever and ever? Or do they treat the person who, you know, the child who is five, who has no resources, but your assistance can ensure that they live, right? Doctors go through this all the time. That's where this ethics of AI. I think companies also have a responsibility in the aspect of when they think about their stakeholders, is not just their corporate sponsors, is not just their shareholders. It is the public. It is the consumers that are buying their products. Those are just as important as they think about how they adopt AI, how they regulate, how they think about the ethics of it. Should they or should they not is really the question most companies should be asking themselves.
Is there an industry that the tech sector should be looking toward as an example of how to introduce new technologies properly in an ethical way? Is there someone that they should be looking to as an example?
So as much as the pharma industry does have some issues, mm-hmm. there is this understanding that when I go to a doctor and I'm prescribed a drug, that there is some thoughts that it might not kill me. And, you know, even though we as people typically don't need all the, you know, the labels of, okay, these are the things, you know, one out of a million people might have a heart attack. We typically disregard that. The information is there. We have a regulatory body that helps us. But we also know that with pharma, you can't have a startup just decide to put a drug out. So you have to also have resources.
Right.
So I think when we think about AI, when we have AI for things that are high risk, we should definitely have this regulations and policies and companies self-regulating themselves. When we have AI for low risk things, is a low risk thing such that I want to create a toy that can make me laugh every so often? I don't know if you need regulations on that. So it makes some bad jokes, off-color jokes. Yeah, okay, I just won't buy it, or I'll tweet or say this is a horrible, horrible, horrible app.
Right.
Okay, let's have the startups have their space. And so there's a combination. So I would say the pharma for high risk types of applications, the drug industry for high risk applications is a model with some caveats of there could be better ways of thinking about how do you ensure all individuals are represented in the data that's being collected, reviewed, even in the drug industry. We know that this has been a problem in the past.
So you're a founder, you're an executive, you're a board member. How are you talking to your teams as an expert on artificial intelligence or robotics? How are you talking to and advising your teams on AI and how they should be thinking about it? What are the conversations that you're having with them?
Yeah, so I usually have two kind of phrases that I always ask. One is, what are the unintended consequences? Mm. So if we do this, what are the unintended consequences? And just throw out anything that could possibly happen. What I find is that when I ask that question, it makes people think outside of their box. It's like, okay, what are the unintended consequences? Well, we could destroy the world. All right, let's have a conversation. What's the risk? What's the probability of that?
Right.
The other thing I always ask is, should we be doing it? Because I think a lot of times as developers, I mean, we like to be the first to the market. We like to be the ones that other people pat us on the back, like, oh, that's so wonderful. That's great. You're awesome and amazing. But the other question is should we really be doing this and why?
Right.
So those are the things that I challenge my team to think about to get us to a better place. And sometimes that means we don't do certain things, or we think about certain products differently because of those two questions. Unintended consequences are too high, too risky, or the benefit does not outweigh the amount of funding or developers' time to really make a difference.
Just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Correct.
Thinking about higher education, thinking about the workforce and this mass introduction of artificial intelligence into our lives, are you seeing school change for your students? Are you seeing the curriculum change to address these new issues?
Well, I will tell you that the curriculum changes are starting now because the fact is that when things like ChatGPT, generative AI, became much more available to the public. What we saw is we saw the ability to easily write essays. You can ask, I need some Python code to do X. And it gives you the Python code. And so you think about even something that was coding, which you thought of as very difficult, you can actually have the script now to do this. And so how do you ensure that students are learning, given that the answers are much, they're much easier to find when you just ask the AI? And so thinking about how do you change your pedagogy and your curriculum so that you think about these AI tools as tools versus as something that students are using for cheating. But it requires us to rethink how we teach, how we assess learning. And that conversation is happening now as we're moving forward because it's there. It's going to be a tool. And so how do we ensure that it's available, but students also understand the limitations of the tools that are out there?
Are you using ChatGPT at all?
I am, but I'm using it to explore the boundary conditions and the limitations because I deal with the ethics of AI. I think about and do research in human trust of AI. And so I and my research group are looking at what are the boundary conditions of its use. How can you do prompts so that you get the answers that are correct versus the answers that are just out there based on data.
Yeah, the recurring theme that I'm hearing when we talk to experts about ChatGPT and generative AI is that the prompt matters. How you tell it, what you tell it to do, how you tell it to do it, that's where you're really going to see either the positive result or the negative result to what you're trying to get out of it.
Yeah, and so this is the problem. So as an expert, if I am doing a prompt to say a ChatGPT or Bard, I know if it's right or wrong, right? Because I know enough. And I'm like, oh, well, that's not quite right. Let me adjust my prompt. But if I'm a, you know, a novice or I'm just entering, I'm like, hey, this sounds pretty legit. All right. And that's the problem. Right. But that's when you want to use the AI, is when you are uncertain. But we also know, at least in my own research, is that when you are the most uncertain, you are the most likely to trust the output of the AI. And so it's this kind of like, oh my gosh, like here's AI, it could be a great tool, but when it's wrong, it's going to be really wrong because people are just going to believe it more so because they're so uncertain about the answer in the first place.
That reminds me of an experiment you did years ago with the robot leading people to a wrong place, but they instinctively trusted it because it seemed trustworthy. So
it seemed trustworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you talk a bit about
to know the answer?
Yeah. Can you talk a bit about that and how kind of easy it is for us to trust these technologies?
Yeah. So the research that you're discussing was research where we had a emergency evacuation situation. So a person was in a building and we had a rescue robot, basically. And so during the experiment, we basically filled the building up with smoke and set off the fire alarms. And so the person had to navigate outside and we would put the robot there to guide them to the quote unquote correct exit. And what we found was that even when the robot would guide them to a way that wasn't to the front, was in an area that might have been dark where they had to physically move things around, individuals still follow the guidance of the robot. Even when we show that the robot did know that it was correct earlier on, like made mistakes, people tended to more likely than not say, okay, well, the robot must know what it's doing. It's connected to the cloud. It must have updated its intelligence. It knows more than I do in this situation. And we also found that we did experiments with self-driving cars. Same thing. People are more likely to follow the guidance of a self-driving car and the information that it provides than their own intuition necessarily, even when the car has made a mistake.
Right. What industry do you think, maybe aside from manufacturing, what industry do you think is going to see the biggest gain from using AI within the next couple of years?
Honestly, I would say the general workforce. So everything from customer service, we've already seen AI impacting that, from even basic assistance. So IT assistance, coding assistance is going to be transformed. The law practices more in the paralegal space is going to be transformed. So basically the entire workforce, where it's based on data and processing through data, is going to be disrupted.
So for those who are concerned about their jobs and losing their jobs at the hands of AI, how do you address that question?
So for every job that is lost, there is one that's created. And so the question is how do you retrain yourself in these new job creations? So that's one. I'm going to do a little bit of deeper dive. The other one is that most of these jobs will require individuals to be comfortable with AI, because AI will be their partner. And so their job will be redefined, because there are still certain things that AI is not able to do today, 5 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, but not in the immediate future. And so if you think about customer service, where you have the AI that can go over all the transcripts of past customer service logs, and so knows exactly what the right response is for this customer. But when you have an angry customer, okay, AI cannot deal with that.
Yeah.
And so how do you then offset where your AI customer service agent is doing the day-to-day interaction? Like, I'd like to return this. Oh, please give us your address. Like, very simple. Mm-hmm. But then when you use AI to determine agitation in the voice, which we can do, you immediately say, have the AI do things like, oh, you know, let me grab someone else to assist you. My human supervisor is about to get on. Right? That's the role. And then as a human, we can navigate those emotional spaces a lot easier.
Right. That makes sense. I can vividly remember working in retail and having that angry customer. So it would have been nice to have a AI buffer. Now, I used to teach middle school math and science. So this next question is definitely coming from that corner of my brain. Thinking about young people and let's say middle schoolers, what skills would you tell them to start building now? Because these jobs we're saying are just being created now, you know, these future jobs that we don't even know what they'll be quite yet. What skills would you say a middle schooler should start thinking about now so that they're prepared for the future?
I still think that understanding fundamental issues around coding is needed. And even though coding jobs per se will be changed, in order to do any job, you're going to need to know, for example, how to prompt correctly. That requires you to understand how the AI is programmed, how it's thinking, how it's collecting data, how it's thinking about filling in the missing pieces. So taking a coding course, understanding coding allows you to think logically in that form or fashion. And through coding, you'll get into some elements of AI tools and what this all means. So I think that's a fundamental skill that allow you to go into law, go into healthcare, go into education. Just that one basic thing, because you'll now be able to think about AI and use it as a tool in your own work, in your own career.
I will keep that in mind. I have a 9-year-old cousin who we said we were going to learn how to code together. So we haven't started yet, but it's on our list. Let's just go back to your time at NASA. What excites you about the advancements in technology that have happened since then?
So you can do more faster. So I remember, you know, one of my first projects that I was running was, how do we do navigation on Mars, so future rover? And the way we worked it was, we extracted data from scientists using camera data and tried to figure out how they navigated on analogous kind of simulated Mars terrain here on Earth. And the amount of data that we could collect was fairly limited. And the amount of time it took to process was very, very long. And so when we made a mistake, or we didn't collect enough data, it was like, all right, we got another month to figure this out. Now you can iterate so quickly on pretty much everything and anything. When you find a mistake, when you find you don't have enough data, when you find that the output is a little biased, that is fascinating to me, because it means that we have accelerated our use of technology for, and I'm an optimist, I think is for the global good. And we've accelerated that at a faster rate. It made it much more accessible to world populations versus just those that have, those who could afford computers or laptops at the time.
Mm-hmm. So what are you working on now? What's next for you? What's coming up?
So I am working on this intersection of robotics, AI, and healthcare in the pediatric space. So the newest thing that I'm really excited about is how do we provide your AI healthcare partner in the home environment at a very, very low cost. Mm-hmm. So cheaper than a game system, cheaper than a phone, cheaper than a computer. How do you bring a robot that can understand you, understand your movements, understand your emotions, and basically do exercise in the home? So very, very excited about that. Yeah. Working with a startup company to design the robotic interface. So extremely excited about that.
Wonderful, wonderful. So we like to do a quick lightning round in these episodes. So I have just four quick questions for you. So answer the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Okay. In your opinion, what is today's single most consequential technology?
Artificial intelligence.
Easy. What technology didn't exist when you were growing up do you think is taken for granted today?
Computers.
And looking back 20 years from now, what emerging technology do you think will have had the biggest impact on society?
Robotics.
And last but not least, what's your favorite app on your phone?
Oh, that's a hard one. I would probably say it's Chrome.
I mean, that's the gateway to everything, right?
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Tell us, where can we find you online? Where do you hang out online?
Online, at this point, Twitter, at RobotSmarts is the best way to connect with
me. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Howard, for joining us. It's a pleasure to see you and chat with you, as always.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much, Whitney and Dr. Ayanna Howard. As always, really appreciate you making time to be on the show. Next time on Minds Worth Meeting, I will be speaking with author of Ethical Machines, Reid Blackman, an AI ethicist. Believe me when I tell you, this conversation is one of the most timely ones we've had so far. That's next time on Minds Worth Meeting. Minds Worth Meeting is a production of Stern Strategy Group. Our hosts are Whitney Jennings and Justin Lewis. Alan Halimsky is our video editor. The production team includes Kaylee Heverin and Meg Vierick. Whitney Jennings is Stern Speakers and Advisors Marketing Manager. And Brandon Pantano is our Digital Marketing Director. Join us next time for another episode of Stern Strategy Group's Minds Worth Meeting, streaming on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.